Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to DSMA Live Rents, a discussion on parenting, diabetes, and sometimes, somehow, where they intersect. My name is Bennett Dunlap, and I'm joined today by my good friend and co-host, Lorraine Sisto. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Bennett. Yes, my name is Lorraine. We're hosts of Rents, and between the two of us, we have seven kids, three of which are living with diabetes.
For the record, we don't have kids. I have my kids, and you have your kids. My wife and I have our kids, and your husband and you have your kids. Well, it's always nice to start off with a little bit of levity. Rent is a program of the Diabetes Community Advocacy Foundation, also known as DCAF, the kind of coffee that I don't drink. Our mission is to connect, support, and empower, and educate people who are affected by diabetes.
And today we've got two things we want to talk about. The first is going to be incenting for diabetes care. Do you reward your children in any way for caring for their diabetes? We'll share our opinions and experiences. We saw an article recently. We talked about it briefly in our show with Mike Hoskins, but we want to spend a few more focused minutes on that topic. And we'll also talk about our favorite diabetes reads, books we've found meaningful over the years. So we'll get right into
Excellent.
It. The article we mentioned a couple of shows ago with Mike, it was something that I saw posted on Dexcom's Facebook page, actually. They posed the question. And when I originally saw the topic or title, I thought, well, no, of course not. Like, we should be teaching our kids to care for their diabetes for the sake of wanting to be healthy and just doing it because it's the right thing to do. But then when I read the article, I understood a little bit more where it was coming from. And it was, there was actually a study done about the effectiveness of little tiny incentives, like dime or nickel incentives for every time a child checked their blood sugar. So it wasn't based upon what the result was. It was just a means of encouraging checking, doing an action of diabetes care. And it was for kids who had what was considered an elevated A1C result, and other methods weren't necessarily working. And I guess they're in a stage of increased autonomy. So they tried this method of incenting the kids, and it worked. There showed a change in an improvement in A1C to their benefit, and, you know.
Right. So one of the things that when I first heard of this, and having not read the study, was the amount of the incentives involved. And the study, the write-up that we share a link to says, and I quote, a new study has found that offering, and this is my emphasis, but it's their word, very minimal rewards, 10 cents each time they made a test, had a significant impact on their blood sugar levels. So it really is almost a penny ante game. And that sort of changed my thinking a little bit about it. I don't know, but I just wanted to make that emphasis. What about you? Did you, when you first heard about it, did you think it was that small of an amount?
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Is the title of it, I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. I pictured something different. And then when I heard that it was a study with these micro incentives and it was targeted for a specific purpose, I found that to have a different context and a different meaning. And to me, that was a way to modify behavior. There was a behavior pattern that existed. It was resulting in undesirable results. So how do we modify that behavior? And I would think at some point the behavior is modified, there's new habits formed, and the incentive isn't necessary. But I know we talked about this kind of when you shared the app that you used, that your bit from last week. We're going to do the same this week, share our two bits, something of interest that we think would be to our listeners about just seeing other people giving you an attaboy in terms of workouts, and in your case, biking. And there's just that encouragement. And I made reference to, you know, little kids and sticker charts. It's just a sticker, but it feels good. It's some kind of reward and pat on the back. And maybe that's what it is, because I don't know that a dime is going to really motivate anybody.
Whenever there's a study, you know, you always want to know more. And I was going to drill down and try to find the actual study and read it, and I admit that I did not do that. But one of the things that I'm curious about is who was the positive reinforcement giver in the study? Was it the study itself, or was that through parents? And I guess in the back of my mind, you know, you mentioned that why I use Strava, the bicycling app, is to get those attaboys, you know, somebody to pat me on the back for doing the right thing. And I always cite this quote, and I think it's from John Cleese in the Wall Street Journal about 3 decades ago, but I could be wrong. But the quote is, people work for love and money, and nobody gets enough of either. And it was actually an article on the importance of saying thank you. So I think about this, and I wonder if the 10 cents really isn't just a way of saying thank you. And I would love to know if the study was somehow involving parents, and was while kids were being positively reinforced with a dime, if it wasn't maybe creating a very low-scale process for parents to be positively engaged in giving positive reinforcement. I used positive way too much in that sentence, Lorraine. So what are your thoughts on that?
I read the article, and it didn't even occur to me to think where were the incentives coming from. I had just assumed that it was the parents were providing that incentive.
Yeah, and so I don't know. And it says that during the 3-month study, on average, the teens ended up bringing in $122. So that's a lot of dimes, although there was a doubling down. If you did more than 4 tests a day, you got an extra 50 cents. So, you know, maybe it's not 1,220 tests at 10 cents a pop. Maybe it was some amount less than that. But I think the question is, the positive reinforcements work. And when you say that, it's like, duh, of course they do. And the question then becomes, how do you incentivize having positive reinforcements? And I guess the first step is you need to teach people that giving positive reinforcements is a good idea. And I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it probably depends whether or not it's a good idea. I mean, positive reinforcement, how could you say positive reinforcement is not a good idea? But this whole incentive concept probably varies on people's circumstances. After reading this article, I kind of stepped away and looked at our situation. And one of the things, and Caleb is very independent and does what he needs to do in his day. My son is 12 years old. He pretty much cares for his diabetes on his own. We exchange texts throughout the day, but he's pretty much on his own. And one of the things that he has not been great at is attending to a Dexcom low alert. Dexcom will give him a heads up, you're on the bubble here, you might be falling, and he'll look at his Dexcom and say, okay, it says I'm 90, it says I'm 80, but I feel fine. Boop, forget it. And he goes back to whatever he's doing. But he's not thinking, am I continuing to drop? And then he ends up with a low. So I said, All right, what can we do with that? Can we use some kind of incentive? Because me explaining to him, you've got to do it, wasn't working. And he understands the ramifications. Like, he gets what it all means, and he understands that why it happened. He just can't get over this. Well, I feel fine, so why would I do anything now? Right. And so we set up a marble system, and I said, I don't know, we negotiated some terms in terms of how many marbles he would get and what they would represent, and it worked. It worked for like a week. but it did work. And he was seeing less lows. He was taking action to prevent a low as opposed to just stopping when he said, I feel fine. Why would I do anything now?
Right. So and what happened with it is something when he like collected a bunch of marbles, did that trigger something or
marbles he could turn in for screen time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. You know, the article does talk about screen time or other positive reinforcements. So right straight out of the article. Nice job.
Yeah. I have a hard time with incentive plans like this in general. I've tried to be very good about these types of things for all of my kids, and they usually work for a little bit of a time and then they go away. I don't know. I haven't found the one that really sticks and is something that's meaningful to them. And screen time is a good example because pretty much if Caleb gets his jobs around the house done, he gets his homework done, you know, he's in enough activities that I'm not worried about him becoming a couch potato and not being active. You know, I'll let him have the privilege of having screen time regardless. He doesn't have to do extra things to earn it. So,
right.
You know, I haven't been able to find that good mix of, okay, well, I will give you this reward. And maybe that's why dimes work, because it's an extra thing above and beyond other stuff. Maybe I should try the dimes.
So, yeah, I think that it's fascinating, and I would love to hear your feedback on whether dimes work. But I wonder really if in the back of my mind, really what this is – attaboy works. And so often I think it is easy to fall into the trap, and this is the one I fall into the trap of, it's their responsibility, let them learn to take it on themselves, as opposed to just, hey, great, thanks for checking. And maybe the dime is just, thanks for checking. And that positive reinforcement of a behavior is seen as, hey, my parents are paying attention to me. They're not making a big deal out of it. But, you know, I know they're looking. So, you know, I know they care. And I think that actually the dime or the very low value adds power, because it sort of takes diabetes and moves it down to a very insignificant amount, but it still matters that you say thanks.
Right. It also makes me think of the app that we've talked about in the past, My Sugar, which has a positive reinforcement, kind of like the app that you've been using. When you check a certain amount of times, there's this little little character that kind of says, yay, oh, you did it, you know, and like makes some happy noises and stuff. And that's another thing that, it was fun. It was a fun thing. It was a fun reward. It was a fun response. But again, another thing that's kind of hard to maintain. So I think the idea is great. I think if you've got a specific behavior you're trying to change, I definitely think an incentive program can apply. I'm really interested to know, though, if anybody's able to make something last for a period of time, or maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you don't need to have it last for a period of time. I'd love to know other people's experiences, what they've used, what they found successful, if they've had a specific behavior or compliance need that they wanted to change.
So maybe that's a great ask for listeners. Find us on Facebook and just, you know, what do you think of a dime? Does a dime last? I would love to hear feedback on that. So we'll put a post up that says, does a dime last? And we would love to hear your feedback on that.
Yeah, and you can find us on Facebook at, I think I said it wrong last night, time. It's our Facebook page is Diabetes Community Advocacy Foundation. It's not DSMA, it's DCAF. So you can find us there, comment there, as well as on Twitter. I'm called Callie. Bennett is Bad Shoe. Definitely interact with us there. We'd love to hear from you. You can respond whatever form is more comfortable, even on our blog at dsma.com. or diabetescast.org.
Yeah, we'll link the Facebook page. We'll put a link right on the episode thing on Blog Talk Radio. It says, this is the Facebook page.
Perfect.
So that it's easy to find. And if you're like me, you can't type characters without being dyslexic and typing them in wrong.
So another thing I thought we could talk about is I often get asked by people about what are good resources, what are good books to use to learn more about diabetes. And that often comes from people who have a new diagnosis in their family. But I think it's whether you have a new diagnosis or have been living with this for years, a new good read is always a good idea. I've got my favorites. I'm wondering, Bennett, do you have yours? And what would be your number one if you had to share?
So I think that's really going to depend on who I'm talking to. I think if you're a noob, fresh to the world of diabetes, you might not have the time to sit down and read an entire book just because it's so stressful the first few months to year. So in that case, I think I would be pointing people at good social media resources, and I would be looking to find a place to match that person with someone like them that they're going to get some feedback that just basically says, you're not alone, you can do this, it's okay. And I think I would be pointing people to blogs, ideally of people that are their peers. So it's a parent of either a child their age or a parent older than their child, so that they can sort of see the path that person took to getting to the new normal.
Right, right.
So for a newbie, I would be looking to help them find the new normal.
I have to say that that's absolutely great advice, but for me personally, when it was new to me, it was new to me, and I knew absolutely nothing, and I wanted to know everything as much as I could, and I was willing to read encyclopedias if that was going to get me up to speed and knowledgeable. So I really, really, really wanted books and useful books, and I went to the library, and that was a huge fail because most books in the library were old and outdated, and you know the concepts of diabetes is fairly simple, and the concept of what you need to do to treat it is the same. However, the methods have varied dramatically. Concept is the same. You know, you take insulin. You check your blood sugar. If it's out of range, you give more insulin. If out of range high, you give more insulin. If it's out of range low, you need to take carbs. Okay, that's all the same. But the way people are able to incorporate technology into their lives, much different and results in a different quality of life. So do not go to the library unless you've got a very up-to-date, current library. I found one book that, if I had to recommend to a newbie of a parent of a child who is diagnosed, it's called Type 1 Diabetes. I think that's what it's called. It's just this, you know, not a complicated or unique name. I wrote it down here.
Goodbye.
It's Type 1 Diabetes. Nope, I can't find the name. I'm going to look that up for a second. Okay, Type 1 Diabetes.
Well, here, while you look that up, I'll offer a book. So you can look up the book in the title, and I would say that one of the books that I would recommend for a person that really wants to sit down and read is a book by a good friend of mine, Carrie Sparling. It's called Balancing Diabetes, Conversations About Finding Happiness and Living Well. And, you know, I guess kind of to the point I just made is there's a lot of comments in there from a lot of different people. And the idea isn't that it isn't about that life with diabetes is about diabetes. It's that life with diabetes is about having a life and passions and how to have those while dragging diabetes, kicking along and screaming along, you know, for the ride. You know, diabetes is second. And living a life is first, and how do you find that the way to do that? So I love the book. I love Carrie. I love all the people she quotes. So I think that's a great place to start.
I think we're a good balance in our perspectives here, because you're tending to very much the emotional well-being, and I am in the down and dirty. Here are the mechanics of what you need to do. So I found the name of the book. It's called Type 1 Diabetes, A Guide for Children, Adolescents, Young Adults, and Their Caregivers. And it's probably not one you see recommended a lot. There are some books that are out there that you'll hear often, and they're great. This one was really helpful to me because it was comprehensive without being overwhelming, and it was specifically addressing type 1 diabetes, and it was specifically addressing type 1 diabetes in the child. So it talked about food. It talked about dosing. It has multiple chapters, which may sound very overwhelming, but it was, like I said, comprehensive without being overwhelming. It's very, very informative, and it was a book that I did read from front to back.
So in that regard, I'm a big fan of Gary Shiner.
Yep.
Think Like a Pancreas. And the more specialized, if you're going down the road of pumping, Pumping Insulin by John Walsh.
Yep.
And both of those are on the bookcase that is literally, an arm's reach away from me at all times. And I don't think I read either of those cover to cover, but I read them as resource tools, although I do love Gary Shiner's diagnosis story, so it's worth going and reading. So those are two that I would suggest in the mechanics department.
Yeah, those are both
on
my list.
And coming up with a psychosocial one.
Well, just to Gary's book, like that is Think Like a Pancreas is the book that comes to my mind first, because I think that's one that, although someone who's a newbie can definitely benefit from, anybody can benefit from that book. Very applicable, very meaningful, very realistic recommendations. And I think he actually has a balance of not only the mechanics, but the emotional well-being. So I think if you had to pick one book, that might be the one that I would recommend. I just think that is a stellar option as far as book choices go. Pumping Insulin is another one that's on my shelf as well, and I love that one. That one I have not read cover to cover, because that one is really more of a textbook flavor. It is just even more comprehensive than any of the other books we've mentioned so far, but it's so helpful,
yeah,
so meaningful.
Put tabs on pages of that one.
And
that's what I do. I literally, there's pages of that I have tabbed and worn the tabs out of. Although he did give me a new copy. I saw him over the summer, and he was kind enough to give me a copy and autograph it and cool stuff like that. So that was very exciting.
Yeah, those, in terms of having an arsenal, are definitely meaningful books. I agree with those wholeheartedly.
So let's take it out of the library and on to online. What's one or two sites that you would recommend people go to find their way with type 1 diabetes?
That's a loaded question. And it's changed, because where I used to go when we first started, so who am I talking to? Am I talking to people who are newly diagnosed?
You get to define who you're talking to. That's part of the deal. You're allowed to put with the Aladdin. It's those improvisos or whatever the genie says.
Yeah. I have to say, 2diabetes.org has always been a good resource for me. I just find the people there to be so good-hearted and so quick to help. If you have a question, bam, you get answers from real-life people. And I think the community there is probably heavier on the adult than on the parent, but there's a balance of both. And I know that myself, I've learned as much, if not more, from the adult living with diabetes than the parent taking care of someone with diabetes. So I really value that community. Number two, I'm going to have to say, is probably Facebook and various groups and communities there, although I don't really feel like I go to groups there. I feel like because I'm so deep into this that I just have friends that know what I'm talking about. And so therefore, my network there just exists, even though not everybody there is a diabetes person. But I'm having trouble coming up with another social media place to go.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. I think I would say the Children with Diabetes forums were incredibly valuable to me over the years, and they still are, although I don't spend as much time on them as I used to. And like you, I find interesting things on Facebook, but like you, it's like I have friends, and the friends lead me down the wormhole of a group. There's a couple of real active groups that are super technical, and you know, I think like-minded people find like-minded people, and that's the whole point of Facebook. So,
yeah, I did go. Children with Diabetes is probably the first place I ever went online to reach out and ask questions and get help, and I was very active there at the very, very beginning. And maybe, I don't know, I can't even say because I don't go back there frequently enough to know. I know there are people who are not new that are there and stay there, but I think my answers have, my questions have been answered in terms of what I was able to get from there. There are a lot of great resources there, though, that aren't necessarily part of the forum, but I know there's, you know, rundown of the different pump options, different CGM options. They're not necessarily discussions. They're just sections of children with diabetes. And I remember always going to check out that ketone page. They've got that chart with green, red, yellow, and just to define and make you understand what all the different ketone results are, whether you're using a blood ketone meter or not. But they've got different things like that, and it's not just limited to those that I've mentioned. There are other nice little key sections in there outside of the forum that are useful.
Yeah, and I think at this point in my life with diabetes, the things that I, you know, I've used Google Scholar. And in part, that's because I'll read an article like the one that we started this conversation off with. And I want to go read the actual nitty-gritty, and I regret that I didn't do that with this article. But, it's a bizarre thing, and I think that maybe, you know, speaks to the fact that, like you, I can get super geeky about technical things. And when I have those questions, Google Scholar is great.
What is Google Scholar? I don't even know what that is.
So you can, instead of just searching the internet, scholar.google.com will let you search journals. And you can put a filter, or you could go in there and put diabetes, or you could say children with diabetes, or you could put in some specific search, and it will find you scholarly articles on the topic that are footnoted up the Yahoo. Most of them are behind pay firewalls, so it's sometimes difficult to get an actual article. But if you see one you really love, there's always a link to the corresponding author, and you can usually email them, and they will email you a copy of the full-blown article. It's like for people that really like to drink from a fire hose, guilty as charged.
Well, that's a really interesting tidbit that you're sharing, which maybe is a good segue into our two bits for this week or this show, a time where we share something we think will be interesting to our listeners, could be diabetes-related, might not be diabetes-related. Is that yours, or did you have something else you wanted to share?
So, yeah, I'll let that be my two bits for this week. That's good.
Well,
my other one would be depressing.
I'm never heard of it before, so I appreciate having that bit. That's news to me.
And your two bits?
So my bit, because combined we have two bits. So my bit for the week is not diabetes related. And it has to do with Facebook. And we talked about Facebook a little while ago. And I don't know if you know this. Do you know that – well, let's talk about your Facebook feed. Do you ever look at your Facebook feed and say, why is this at the top of my feed? And how come I'm missing these other things that I'm following this page or this person and I never see it?
Yes, I look at Facebook and am continually dumbfounded that as soon as I think I figure anything out, they change it. And I'm old and I have gray hair, and I just think that's how Facebook works for me.
Yeah, no, they prioritize. I don't know how it works, but they prioritize what you see. And I think it has to do with who you interact with most often or what pages you proactively go out and look at or what you like or what you comment on. I think they take that information and then they'll put that stuff up higher on your feed. But what my bit is what's called see first in Facebook. There's a way for you to actually control what you see first. And there's a couple of places that you can do it, and I will include a link in the Blog Talk Radio description to the Facebook directions. It's really easy to do, but it's, at least for me, it's more of a visual thing. You go into preferences. It has to do with your news feed. So you go into your news feed preferences, and you select See First, and you can pick up to, I think it's 30 different pages or people of articles that you want to see, that you don't want to miss, and those will pop up on your feed first. You can also go to a person's page and do it. So there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can do it through your settings, or you can just go directly to the person's page, and in the area where you might select to message that person from their page, there's an option there in a drop-down box, and you'll see first. And you can tag that person to be someone that you see first. So if you don't want to miss your sister's post because she never talks to you in any other format and you don't know what's going on in her life, you can choose her. If you wanted to never miss another post for decaf, you can have them in your see first. Whatever it is, I have Beyond Type 1 in my see first. I have, you know, some diabetes things, some not diabetes things. I've got people, and it's helped because there are some things that I'm just like, I'd never see this, and I want to know, and I'm missing it, and I don't know how to get it in my feed, and I can't look through everything either. So that's my bit for the week, is see first, the option in Facebook. It came out this summer, I think, so it's not an old thing. You haven't missed out for very long if you don't know about it. And check it out, and make decaf one of your top 30, because you do max out. You can't see everybody first.
Well, that was quite a bit, quite quick. Thanks so much. I will learn how to do C first. I want to thank everybody for listening in. We really do want your feedback, so whether you see us first or second on Facebook, please let us know how you give us your two bits about 10 cents. How was that?
That's perfect, yeah. Whether it's on Facebook, on our decaf page, if you know us personally and you're friends with us, we're both on Facebook, obviously, and you can reach out to us there. You can reach out to us on Twitter. The diabetescaf.org has a blog. You can comment there. You can comment on Blog Talk Radio, actually, as well. So anywhere you can comment, please do. We want to hear from you, not only about the show and about the 10 cents and our two bits, but ideas for future shows or guests you want us to invite on the show. We want to know what you want, and that's what we will focus on for our future shows.
Excellent. Well, thanks for listening, and Lorraine, I'll let you do the close.
Yeah, this has been another edition of DSMA Live Rents. We thank you all for listening in. Please share our, after you've listened, share our show, let other people know that where we are and how to find us. And we're still working on getting into a groove with our new format and how frequently we'll be doing shows. We actually got this one a little bit shorter, so if we do them shorter, we might have quicker conversations and more frequent shows. Just to touch upon conversations and things that are meaningful to us as well as you. So stay tuned for us fine-tuning a more specifically timed frequency of our shows. We're still on Mondays. We're now at 1 o'clock, and we'll be doing at least one show a month, maybe two. But stay tuned for final programming in that regard. And until next time, we ask you to wear blue on Fridays, and be well.
Be well. Thanks.